You mentioned earlier that the Public Affairs Office of the Embassy had the Information Bureau, Information Division, which I guess was more related to short-term foreign policy objectives. That's the impression I got from reading about the activities of the Information Program was more based on short-term needs of the foreign policy. To what extent do those short-term goals have any complicating impact on your interest in having more of a long-term influence on the country?
In some countries, a great deal, but in Iran, at that time, almost none.
Yeah.
As I said, it was not a paradise for information officers. Their program was so long range that basically, in most cases, it was exactly what I was doing, except they were doing it from the press side. There was no real way to pack policy information into the paper, and in fact, what they packed in was general information. And the fact was, there really wasn't a lot to be done. I mean, we didn't have any real issues with Iran, not the kind of thing that was hammered out in the press anyway. So that the discussions that took place were really in the quiet chambers of power, and they certainly didn't do much. So that basically, they put out a magazine, on the board of which I sat, so that it had strictly. It was in tune with what I was doing. We put out the little returning magazine, which they did for us. They did the printing and so forth. They were very wonderful. As long as I was there, they let me run that magazine. It was stopped, by the way, the minute I left, which is probably a sign that they didn't really like it, but that's a different question. They let me do it while I was there. And so I felt well supported by the information section, and I don't recall anything ever happening that in policy terms, was a problem for me. Vietnam was a problem in the sense that we got a pack of slides about Vietnam, really quite ridiculous, which we were supposed to develop a slide lecture about to go out and tell people why Vietnam was a noble cause. And it came into my office just because that's where the mail arrived. And I just made it quite clear, not in any angry way, but that I had no intention of going out and giving a lecture on Vietnam. And as far as I know, nobody did, because it was irrelevant in that country. There was no real need for us to explain what we were doing in Vietnam. They knew perfectly well what we were doing in Vietnam. The only time that I ever had any sense that there was something going on that I didn't know was the assassination attempt on MacArthur. And I remember Jay Gilder coming into the office that day and saying that there was this rumor going around that there had been an assassination on the attempt on the ambassador, and that we were to be absolutely emphatic that it wasn't true. And I remember saying to Jay, and in front of everybody, and at the end of this long, now I realize, quite carefully calibrated explanation to us all that it wasn't. It was to be said that it wasn't true, but the obvious assumption was that it was. But I didn't pick that up, and I said to Jay, well, the question is, Jay, is it true or not? And he looked at me with a big smile, and he said, it's absolutely untrue. I wonder if Jay will remember that. But that's the only time where I ever felt that I had to lie about anything in terms of policy in that country. We had, by the way, while I was there, we had a tiny, tiny, tiny projectile, it was a rock or something, thrown through one of the windows of the Iran-American Society, and then we had a bomb. We had a mess bomb. It seems to me it was in the spring of 71, perhaps. It was planted in the men's room and made an awful mess. It blew out the plumbing, and there was a lot of water flowing around, and it blew out the telephone switchboard and so forth. So it was pretty messy, but it was time to go off around midnight when no one would be there. So it was just a warning to that we were there, that they were watching, and that somebody. Now I'm talking about 71. I remember that by several times alluded to the fact that my first 4 years were wonderful, and the last year was a little different. That was one of the factors in the spring of 71 that made me think that things were changing, and that we were going to be in for rougher times ahead. But that's another story.
I read a James Phillips book that in the late 60s, or the mid-late 60s, the Iranian Popular Press ran a fair amount of critical material on the U.S. role in Vietnam. Did you know much about that at the time? Did you read press reviews or translations of press articles? Or?
You know, my leftist friends, whom I had some, used to gripe about it from time to time, but I wasn't particularly aware it was going on in the press. Uh-huh. I'd like to. I'm rather surprised now that you say that. As I think about it, I don't know how much criticism they could have published in the press about that. I mean, I don't think they would have been allowed really to do a lot. Maybe one alluded to it, but I just don't. I don't have any awareness that Vietnam was a problem. Certainly was not a problem in the world that I moved in at all.
Now, when you arrived in Toronto, as we mentioned before, Arvin Meyer was ambassador. How would you assess him as ambassador?
I think Arvin Meyer was a very good ambassador. I think he had there were a lot of people in the State Department who thought Armin was a kind of a peasant or something. Armin comes from the middle class, probably the lower side of the middle class, didn't have much of an education, and had knocked around in the Department of State and had somehow done very well for himself. But he wasn't your ordinary FSO by any means. He was very much a man of the people. He identified, I think, more with Abraham Lincoln than anybody else. And he had a certain rough-hewn quality. And as I'm sure everyone will tell you, he had a very difficult lady with him, which I could, you know, we could talk about if you wanted. But the key fact is that that Armin was a very ambitious man in that he wanted to be the best ambassador we'd ever had in Iran. That's as simple as that. And he worked endlessly for that end, endlessly. He put in endless hours. He was a workaholic. He didn't do anything else. My sense is that his contribution was very simple. He supervised this transition into this period of sovereign partnership with, it seems to me, considerable skill, a great deal of earnestness, and with a certain resistance, which was absolutely necessary. It was critical that the American presence during this period of partnership did not get into a period of reverse tutelage, that we become clients, as it were, of Iran. And what Armin Meyer was capable of doing was resisting these things and putting them in perspective. So I give him high marks for that. The other thing that I think he should get credit for was a very intelligent, very unusual effort for an American diplomat. Very intelligent effort to get a better press for Iran, as I think I said before. All things considered, I think he was a very decent ambassador. He was not, I think, appreciated by the Iranian upper classes, who tended to be rather snobbish about him. He didn't speak French, after all. I mean, that put him down in their eyes. And he was a very earnest, very simple, straightforward kind of a man. And I think the Iranian upper classes didn't particularly rise to that. But on the other hand, I think they appreciated that he was a very useful ambassador for them to have.
How did he run the embassy? How did he manage the embassy?
Well, remember, I wasn't in the embassy. The USIA building was about a mile and a half down the road.
Oh, I thought that. Okay.
Yeah, and I didn't really watch that very carefully. I knew everybody in the embassy. But what shall I say? He had a fine deputy, Nick Thatcher. He had two superb political counselors. One was Martin Hertz, the great and late, unfortunately, Martin Hertz. And after him, Jack Armitage, who was retired and living in Charlottesville, as you know. And the political section, I think, was extremely good. I don't have any question about how he managed the embassy. My sense is it was very well managed. It was put in the best of hands. The one issue that I think I should tell you about, it's a very interesting issue. I had a cultural attaché who knows as many people as I do is always on demand to do some kind of political reporting. I had taken the line that I was not a trained political reporter, that it was not my job, and that I had many, many other things to do, but that I would be very open to anybody from the political section that wanted to talk to me. Well, the political section took me up on that, and every Friday at, as I recall, 3 o'clock, usually the junior man of the political section, but somebody would come over and sit with me for an hour, and we would just chat. And they would ask me about people, and they would ask me about ideas, and they would ask me about anything that came to mind. And I would be perfectly free and easy with them, and never held anything back that they wanted to know. I was a little mindful of something in Peter Avery's book, in which he points out that in the 60s, a plot against the Shah was revealed in confidence to an American embassy representative, who then squealed, and the whole thing was blown out of the water, and some people put in jail and maybe executed. So I was very mindful of the fact that I could get people in trouble. So I sometimes held back details of one kind or another. But basically, it was a context of great deal of truth. And there's one episode in there that I think is an interesting and revealing episode. I also maintain a certain amount of contact with my colleagues in the CIA on the research and analysis side. And one in particular we got to be very close to. And one day he said, he asked me if I would mind coming over to his office. And I said, I'd be delighted. I've never been invited. They lived in a different section of the embassy, and we didn't normally go there. So I went over, and he said, the reason I wanted you to come over is I wanted to show you something which I can't take out of this office. And he had had a long conversation with a source who I have no way of identifying. Did not at the time, and have not ever tried. Well, someday when I get older, I'll ask him, because it was an intriguing story. But it was a very interesting essay. This was, it seems to me, around 70, maybe. And it was about opposition to the Shah. And it was a very thoughtful analysis from this obviously prominent Iranian source, talking about the kind of dissension, the kind of political opposition that was rampant in Iran, and that was not getting any less. Some of it goes back to resentments of the Mossadegh era, but others have to do with strictly developmental flaws, with the Shah's incapacity to delegate, with his wanting to be involved in everything, with misallocation of priorities, and so forth and so on. Very sensible, very good things. And he asked me, he said, look, I would like to put your name on the bottom of this as having signed it, seen it, and sign off on it. He said, that's unusual, but he said, for reasons that you will understand as you read this, that's what I would like. If you agree with it, will you sign off on it? Well, I saw that what he was trying to do was to get some inkling of the opposition side of the picture into the overt channels. Now, this was, you understand that the CIA can send anything in it once to its files back in Washington. They don't have to show it to the ambassador. This one he wanted to go to the ambassador. In other words, he was trying to tell the ambassador and the State Department desk that something, that things were not all hunky-dory.
What year was this again now?
Hmm?
What year was this?
I think it was 70.
70, how many?
Fall 70, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe spring 70, I can't figure about. And what I there became aware of that day was that there had been a certain amount of screening of negative information coming out of the embassy in the first place. And probably more important, and it's perfectly natural, once it got to the desk, anything negative got to the desk, obviously didn't get upstairs. Why would it? So there was a kind of a tendency to say, this is a minor matter, we'll have it in the file, but we won't talk about it. So the result was that a certain amount of negative reporting wasn't getting out. And that had to do with Armin Meyer's attempt to present the Iran in as good a light as possible. Well, this document I agreed to sign off on. It was exactly what I knew. It's what we all knew. But it was in writing. That's the important thing. And about two or three days later, I got a call from Armin Meyer. He said, Vic, he said, I know it's a bit of a hop over here. It's late in the day. He said, but would you mind very much hopping in your car and coming over? I said, I'd be very pleased to, Mr. Master. I came over, and there on his desk was the memo. And he looked very perplexed and concerned. And that was the tone of his voice. He said, Vic, he says, this is very unusual. I see you signed on the off on this. He said, I know that's unusual, and I know you must have done it with considerable thought, and I know that
the offer must have involved you for various reasons. And he said, I want to make a very simple question. He says, is this really true? And I said, Mr. Ambassador, it's the truest thing I know. He said, I can't believe it. And I said, Armin, it is really true. That is the way they're all thinking. It's obvious to people that you're talking to are not going to tell you this. It is equally obvious that the people we're talking to are going to tell us this. This is only a manifestation of what I think we all know, and it's here in print. We all know it. If you ask any of us, we can tell you. But that is not a subject that comes up. And you don't ask me to report on it, so I don't. But my assumption is you know I've known. And my assumption is that if you ask 10 people this subject, they will tell you at least 9 of them the same thing. And he thought. I mean, there was a long silence. 2 minutes. Long silence. And he just nodded his head. He said, I'm just so surprised by this. And I thought, but it was a man earnestly coming to terms with a force that he respected and people that he respected and people that he couldn't say no to. And it was a matter of great personal concern. It was a very interesting episode.
Did he say that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, a good question. I think he said it.
And if you then ask me, did it do any good? I have the slightest idea. Because once it gets to Washington, you know, who knows what happens to it?
Actually, this wasn't before 70, because he left as ambassador spring of 79.
You're right. It was certainly with him. So
it had to be early 79. Yeah.
Well, it was very late.
Yeah.
It was very late, because the officer in question didn't come until sort of late. There was another episode that happened to me when I was back that will give you some inkling of this. I was in fact staying with the same officer in his home, and he drove me to work one morning. As he drove me in, he said, you know, you're going to the Iran desk, ask them what they think of the following news that we got yesterday. Now, he was talking about the point of view from Langley. And I went into the desk. People. There were 3 people on the desk officer and 2 assistants at that time.
These people at the embassy now?
No, I was back in Washington.
Okay.
This was in 72.
Okay.
Probably spring of 72, might have been fall of 71.
Okay.
I was at Princeton then. And so I went to the desk, and my pal, who's the number 3 on the desk, I said, oh, blah, 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 we talked about this. I said, by the way, what about the news I get that so-and-so? I said, where'd you get that? I said, I talked to our mutual friend this morning, and he said that news had come in the day, and so forth. He said, well, I haven't heard it, and that really concerns me. So he called in his other younger associate, and they agreed that they'd not heard anything of the kind, and they were both very annoyed. So 3 or 4 days later, I saw them, and I said, did you ever find out anything about that? He said, yep. We found out just what we suspected, and it was a good chance to confront him with it. Our boss, the desk officer, the number 1, has been squirreling information, has been keeping information away from us.
Is this Nicholas? What was the substance of this report?
I don't even remember.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember. It was just something,
an example of
just something that he was not sharing with his own underlings on the desk.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, the 2 people in question were, I think, as I recall, either Mike Michaud and John Rouse, or Tim Childs and him and John Rouse. I don't remember. It was 2 of those 3.
And Michaud was at the desk for a while.
I think it was Mike. Yeah. And there was no reason in the world not to trust those people. So now we've got a break.
Okay, so thank you very much.